Today is the official publication date for a new book called What It Means to Be a Democrat. And we're joined on the telephone by the author of this book, George McGovern. Welcome back to the program, Senator.
Thank you. It's good to be with you again.
This is a book that seems very timely in our current state of affairs in this country. What led you to write it, sir?
Well, I was unhappy with the current drift of American politics. It's too negative. It's too partisan. It's too stormy. Instead of looking for ways that two parties can work together to serve the American people. So I thought the first step towards that end might be to define what it is I think the Democratic Party should stand for. Maybe somebody else will write a book on what the Republicans should stand for. There are two great parties with a rich, long history behind them, and they've worked best when they have sought a bipartisan opportunity to do something that would benefit the American people. That's how we got rural electrification when I was growing up. That's how we got the national parks and the national forests that began under the Theodore Roosevelt administration. That's how we got the interstate highway system under President Eisenhower, and so many other things, Social Security, Medicare, guaranteed bank deposits. These are all valuable programs that have been made possible by the federal government when the two parties work together instead of against each other. So that's the reason I wrote this book. I wanted the reader to understand what it is we Democrats stand for. Not so much what we're against, but what are we for? Why should there be a Democratic Party? Why should even Republicans be interested in a competitive, constructive, forward-looking Democratic Party? You know, here in South Dakota, where I was brought up and where I held office in the Congress and the Senate for a quarter of a century, I always had to have Republican votes in order to win. There just weren't enough Democrats in the state to elect a Democrat without Republican help. And perhaps that's one reason why I am so anxious to get our two parties squared away so they can work with each other and get something done on behalf of the American public.
Well, Senator, you started off as a Republican. Your parents were Republicans, and South Dakota is a very Republican state. In the book, your new book, What It Means to Be a Democrat, you say that above all means, the most important thing about being a Democrat is having compassion.
Well, that's true. Sometimes some of the Republican politicians talk as though the federal government is our enemy. It's not our enemy. It just happens to be the best government in the world, and it's there to serve the people of this country. So I'm not hostile to Republicans at all. One of the senators I was closest to and remain close to now that we're both out of the Senate was Robert Dole of Kansas. In fact, when he and I were in the Senate, he was the Republican leader in the United States Senate. But he worked well with Senator Mansfield, the Democratic leader, and with other Democrats. He and I got together on the issue of good nutrition for the American people and efforts to feed the hungry in the poor countries of the world, as well as taking care of the poor here in America. We both come from agricultural states, so we have lots of things in common for farmers and for people that are concerned about nutritional interests. And those are the things that have brought us together.
Your first chapter is called Compassion. And I think we could probably spend a couple of minutes on each chapter and just briefly encapsulate why you've chosen these designations. In Compassion, you state that you are often labeled as a bleeding heart liberal and that you don't have a problem with that.
No. I think our hearts should bleed when we look at the plight of some of our fellow Americans in the slums, in the migrant labor fields, on the Indian reservations, such as we have in my state. These people have very difficult times, and it does make your heart bleed when you think about how well some of us are doing and how difficult it is for others of our fellow Americans. So, yes, I think compassion is very important. It's especially important to be compassionate for people who are too old to take care of themselves anymore, or for people who are too young to take care of their educational needs and other needs. So compassion is an important part of the democratic philosophy. And there are lots of Republicans that share that compassion.
In that same chapter, you make a point which we've been hearing a lot about since the last month or two, and that is that the wealthiest 1% of our population gained 24% of the nation's income. You must be amazed at the Occupy Wall Street movement.
Well, I really am. That's a meaningful expression of how some people feel. I don't think there's any question that this recession was brought on by the mismanagement of the big corporations and the big banks. And it concerns me that they're still giving people who retire in those industries as much as a $100 million bonus at the end of their service to the corporations. I want everybody to be comfortable. I'm not against rich people, and many of them do very impressive philanthropic work, but I want everybody to have enough to live decent and comfortable lives. And we're rich enough as a country to make that possible. We can do that, especially if we accept the fact that we should not be the policemen for the world. I don't mind us doing our part in preserving the order in the world today, but we shouldn't try to do it alone, as we've done so many times since the end of the Second World War. I was a bomber pilot in that war, but it gave me a lift every time I saw British planes in the air on our side. It gave me a lift to know that the 10 million strong Russian Red Army was pushing the Nazi forces out of the Soviet Union. So we can be warm-hearted. We can be concerned about those who are not as favorably positioned as we are, and we'll all be better for those concerns.
You were a great admirer of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was a wealthy man, but he was a compassionate man, and his opponents labeled him as a traitor to his class.
You know, one of the reasons why I think that Roosevelt was a compassionate man and identified with the problems of needy people is that he got infantile paralysis when he was a young man and could never walk or stand again without help. So he learned to depend on other people. He depended heavily on his wife, Eleanor. He depended heavily on the doctors, the nurses, and the hospitals. And it made him understand that he had an obligation as a wealthy American and later as president of the United States to help deal with the problems of these needy folks. You know, the Bible tells us in 100 different ways that we should have compassion for the poor and the sick and the blind and the homeless. And I think those are things that we need to remember while we are grateful for the blessings we've had as a country.
George McGovern joins us on the program. He's just published What It Means to Be a Democrat. A moment ago, you alluded to America's going overseas and getting involved in these conflicts. And in your second chapter, Fear and Defense Spending, you make a statement about all the money that we have poured into war. I believe somewhere in the book you say that we've spent $3 trillion on war-related costs in the last decade. That's a big chunk of our deficit.
It is. Yeah. Actually, that $3 trillion is the estimated long-term cost of our invasion of Iraq. We had no business sending our army into Iraq. They had absolutely nothing to do with the 9/11 attack, and they were no threat to us or to anybody else, for that matter. And so we've got to take a look at some of these things we're doing on the international scene. Now, I don't want to be misunderstood. I'm an internationalist. I believe in the United Nations. I believe in the great agencies of the World Food Program of the United Nations, such as the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Food Program itself. But I don't believe in the United States, with all its power and all its wealth, that it's smart for us to intervene in complicated, conflicted places like the Middle East. We can help, but we shouldn't be going it alone. We shouldn't let the rest of the world think that we're the policeman that's going to maintain order, not only in our own country, but in everybody else's. Even if that were desirable, which it's not, but even if it were desirable, we haven't got the resources to do it. We're $14 trillion in debt, and 75% of that is war debt. The cost of the Vietnam War, the cost of the Iraqi War, the cost of the war in Afghanistan. As I say, even if fighting those wars was important, we haven't got the money to finance it alone, and we shouldn't try to.
The debate that we seem to be having right now is over the very purpose of government. In your book, you state that we're at a crossroads as far as allocating financial resources. You mentioned the good things that the government has done over the years, FDR's programs. You mentioned the rural electric programs, which, had they been in effect earlier, might have illuminated a young George McGovern absconding with a watermelon.
Well, I confess, I got one dark chapter in my life when I was about 12 to 15. I would go into watermelon fields that went on for hundreds of acres, and my friends and I would swipe a watermelon and then take it somewhere and eat it. I don't think we broke up any of the watermelon groves, but it still wasn't our property. So is George McGovern always right? No. I stole watermelons as a teenager. One of my friends, when he saw the back door of a farmhouse open, the farmer yelled out at us, he took off running for top speed with a big watermelon in his arms, and he didn't see a barbed wire fence coming. Oh. He hit that fence at full speed. If a guy can run 60 miles an hour, that's what he was doing. That watermelon exploded like a bomb. It drenched him in watermelon juice and two or three of the rest of us, but it made us think seriously about our life of crime.
You make the point in that chapter, The Purpose of Government, that the grand old party, the Republicans, celebrate the individual, but they need to also remember community and generosity. And speaking of generosity, the next chapter is Food and Hunger. And you have an account of a conversation that you had with John F. Kennedy during the 1960 campaign. He was coming to the Corn Palace in your hometown, and you gave him some advice.
Well, he had spoken before that day at the National Corn Picking Contest outside of Sioux Falls, and he laid an egg. It was raining, it was windy, it was cold. Somebody had written him an agricultural speech, which he didn't understand too well. After all, he was a Boston guy and a New York guy, and he wasn't familiar with South Dakota, Montana, Nebraska, Kansas, and so on. So he said, "George, I've got to speak now in your hometown, Mitchell, South Dakota, the Corn Puffs. I understand there are 5,000 or 6,000 people jammed into that corn. What should I do now?" I said, "Jack, if I were you, I'd throw away that speech. It's no good anyway. And I would go out there without a note and say, I think the farmers of South Dakota and North Dakota and Iowa and Wisconsin and Ohio can do more good in the world than any other instrument we have if we remember that food is power, food is strength, food is hope in a hungry, torn, bleeding world. And we're going to use our agricultural abundance to feed hungry people in India, in Pakistan, in Japan, which was still suffering from World War II, in China, which was still not on the advanced stage they are today. And he got up and made that speech, and he said, if I'm elected, I'm going to name a Food for Peace director to come to the White House and direct a maximum effort to use our farm surpluses to feed hungry people abroad. And incidentally, he gave me that job.
He called you, didn't he, after he got elected?
He got elected by a half of a percentage point. I got defeated in South Dakota by about the same margin. He called up and said, "Well, George, I'm sorry I cost you that election in South Dakota." I said, "Mr. President, you didn't cost me that election. It was the voters that decided they wanted somebody else in the United States Senate." "No," he said, "Bobby told me what was going on out there, and please come and see me before you make any plans." Well, he lifted me from the depths of despair to almost delirious hope, and that's when I got the job as Food for Peace director. I traveled the world feeding hungry people. I think it's fair to say that in a long career, I've fed more hungry people than any other person in the history of the world.
Hmm.
That's the conclusion of an Oxford historian who recently completed a book on historical feeding efforts.
Wow. George McGovern joins us. His book is What It Means to Be a Democrat. And this is an optimistic book. And I'm guessing that you're feeling your optimism has been greatly rewarded recently, since you're a lifetime-long St. Louis Cardinals fan and the amazing World Series championship that they just put away was just absolutely incredible, which takes us to our next chapter, immigration. I'm just going to say two words, Albert Pujols.
Well, Albert Pujols comes out of the South America, out of the Caribbean area. He's probably the greatest player in the baseball world today and a marvelous man. I happen to be a friend of Tony La Russa, the longtime manager of the Cardinals, who resigned the day after they won the World Series a few days ago. And he told me that Pujols is one of the best athletes he has ever in a long life coached. And I think people in every city that have seen him play would agree with that. Anyway, the Cardinals, whom I've been supporting since I was 10 years old, did win the World Series this year, and I'm glad they did, because it was another one of those come-from-behind victories that kind of lift your spirits.
Truly amazing. And who's going to take Albert Pujols' job? I mean, is there an American-born person that's going to take Albert's job? He's a great argument for immigration, isn't he?
He is indeed. And you look at these players in hockey, in basketball, football, baseball, they all have a sprinkling of immigrants that have come to this country. And you know, the truth is that except for the Native Americans, the Indians who lived here for 1,000 years before the white men came, all of us are either immigrants or we're the children or grandchildren of the instruments. My grandfather on my dad's side came from Ireland. My mother and her parents came from Scotland. So I guess I'm what you call the Scotch-Irish. It's a wicked combination. We can get into lots of mischief, but it's also a very creative combination. And so we're one of the great professors at Harvard many years ago, Oscar Hanlon, wrote a book called A Nation of Immigrants. And he was talking about America. So we don't want to curse these immigrants. We're all either immigrants or descendants of immigrants. And they've performed many useful things and will continue to do so. No, we do have to enforce our laws. As long as it's a federal law that only so many people can cross the border at any given time, we have to enforce that the best we can. But we also need to keep in mind that many people who became giants in this country who were immigrants who smuggled aboard ships in Europe against the law and against the rules and came as illegal migrants and then went on to become heads of business and universities and churches and other things. So we should not get too into a wild fit about immigrants. I don't think they take many jobs in the United States that would be taken otherwise by non-immigrants. They do a lot of the work that nobody presently here wants to do, and we ought to be grateful for that.
My guest is George McGovern. His book is What It Means to Be a Democrat. For the last 30 years or so, we've heard rumblings from the Republican Party about shrinking government, about getting rid of whole departments of the government. In this book, you say, well, the Department of Homeland Security could go, but just last night there was a Republican debate where one of the candidates couldn't remember all the departments he wanted to get rid of, but one of the ones that he mentioned was the Department of Education. And you have a wonderful quote from your old friend Gene McCarthy in this section of the book where you say, quote, "The Republicans have a lot of good Republicans. They just never run any of them for office."
Well, they used to run good ones for office. I mentioned George Norris, the senator from Nebraska, La Follette from Wisconsin, Peter Norbeck from South Dakota, Cummins from Iowa. We've had a lot of good Republicans in the Congress and in the White House. And we need two good parties. We really do. We need the competition of a conservative party on one hand and a liberal party on the other. Now, one thing that does disturb me about some of these people who have announced they're running for the Republican presidential nomination is that they seem to hate the United States government. If you listen to them, and it's true also with some of the television people, especially on Fox TV, they seem to hate the United States government. I love the government of the United States. I have no hesitance in saying it's the best in the world. Does it make mistakes? Of course. The government is composed of human beings, but they do a lot of good things. I feel that the taxes I pay to the federal government bring me greater benefits than any other investment I make. And I think a lot of Americans feel that way. So we've got to stop talking about the federal government as though it's a monster sitting there in Washington ready to jump on us. It's not. Just find me a government around the world that's any better, and I'll pay your way to an Ohio State football game.
Okay.
So anyway, this is the way I feel about it. I admire the people that work for the United States government. Not always. Some of them are a little short on what I'd like to see. Mm-hmm. But basically, you travel the world as I have, and you'll come back glad that you live in the United States of America. What bothers me is this constant assailing of the federal government. Look at all the positive things the government does. We've got the most beautiful national parks, national forests in the world. We've got the Tennessee Valley Authority that has brought low-cost electricity to a dozen states in the South. We have Social Security, a wonderful program. Medicare, the only thing about Medicare, I would extend it to everybody. I've been getting it since I turned 65, and it's wonderful. It just means that the federal government pays your medical bills. And those medical bills are going up all the time as we get older, so I think we ought to extend that to every American. On education, it would cost a lot, of course, to provide education to all of the middle-income and low-income students. But you want to know something about the GI Bill that I benefited from after World War II? It educated about 8 million GIs. Mm. The government paid every dime of our education. I went all the way through to a PhD in history at Northwestern. But the government actually made money on it. And let me tell you why. All of us, after we got these fine educations, were earning more money than otherwise would be the case. So for the last 50 or 60 years, the federal government has been collecting more taxes from us 8 million that benefited that program. Uh-huh. The government's made $2 for every dollar the program costs. I think the same thing would apply today if the government picked up the tab for higher education for low-income and middle-income youngsters. The very rich can pay for higher education. The middle class and the working class can't. So let's do something about that.
My guest has been George McGovern. His book is a very timely one. It's called What It Means to Be a Democrat. Senator, we really appreciate your time today.
It's a pleasure.
For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.